show. Hey, Demasi.
What's happening, man?
Oh, I was a plumber today.
Ah, you told me about that.
Oh.
Did everything go well? You didn't, no. didn't flood anything?
No, everything did not go well. I mean, we didn't... We found water where there shouldn't have been water. I'll leave it at that. Not good. Not good. And then we had some hoses that just would not fit. And Mallory went back to the hardware store like 3 times and I'm laying underneath the cabinet and we didn't even get the right hoses because they weren't labeled and it was an odd size of connector on the water spigot, whatever you call it, where the water actually comes out. So we ended up just using the hoses from the old faucet and that was difficult to do, but you know, got them off and got everything connected. We now have water again in the kitchen and our sink is not playing that loud, annoying sound when your weights in your sink are off, which sounds like a sink stuttering. I'm sure you've heard it before.
Probably, but I did not know that was a thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And online it said, oh, you probably need to just replace your faucet. So we replaced the faucet $100 later. Well, actually, probably I think we've got like $150 into it now. So what I started doing was, or what I tried doing here and why you heard double of what we're going to play today is because for some reason you are hearing it twice. I have two different devices, the Payon Innovations and Payon Innovations 2, and I set the second one to the Farago device that I created in Loopback, and then Loopback or Farago is set to track system output. So I don't know why you were hearing double, but it is working properly now, and everything will just be recorded on my track, because my goal was I wanted to get these on a separate track, and I don't know why I didn't just upload them as clips, mainly because I wanted to play Farago, because I bought it, and yeah.
So I'm trying to think of a way that you could have done that. Where is Farago's output set to?
Farago's output is set to track system output.
Ah.
Playback main is set to track system output, Vocaster 1 USB, and then preview is set to track system output, Vocaster 1 USB.
I would maybe set up a pass-through Loopback device
and set that to where the output
set that to the output. Yeah,
well,
so the reason I think I was hearing it doubled is because it was pulling, like, so you had it, did you have it set up in clean feed as its own track for a second? Yeah.
And so then I just muted that device because you know how when you're signed in here, there's two Payon Innovations. So the second one I set to the Farago virtual device as the input.
Gotcha. Yeah. I would try setting a output device, a pass-through device. I haven't played with Farago in a while either. I should take a look at it. But that would be my quick hot fix solution, at least, is just set up a pass-through device called Farago out. Point Farago at that and then use that as the input to clean feed for that second track.
Well, what we have now is gonna work for the purposes of this event. Demasi, how has your week been? You're off now for a week, aren't you?
Yeah, technically sort of.
Technically, sort of.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not in class for a week, But still studying serve safe because nobody was ready to take the test this week. But the week was pretty okay. We did our thing with the chicken wings and fries for lunch on Wednesday of this week because we knew so many people were going to be leaving or staff not coming in on Thursday/Friday. So I did that on Wednesday. Not as big of a day as the first time we did chicken wings and fries. We made almost $900.
You made how much?
Almost $900.
Wow.
This time was only like $580, so close to $600 this time. So not as much, but we also didn't get as many orders, as much traffic as we did the first time we did it either. I am still on the hunt. So if anybody knows of one, and yes, I have tried the one. I don't remember the model name of it, but I bought it from San Francisco Lighthouse. But I'm on the hunt for an instant read thermometer that is accessible in some form, preferably with its own self-voicing. Not, I need to pull my phone out, because then that gets weird if I'm trying to temp something with one hand and check what it says on the phone with the other hand. And we're talking chicken wings or something like that, you know, in a cooking situation. So still on the lookout for that. Mike mentioned the meter has a new plus that can go up to a higher temperature. So I'm going to have to go research that. I may take a look at that, although that could get irritating as well. But essentially for sighted people, people with enough vision to see the screens on these things, there are instant read thermometers. There's infrared versions of this that kind of look like a little toy gun. And you point it at, you know, the meat surface and hit the button, and it instantly comes back and gives you the surface temperature of the meat. It's not giving you the internal temperature, obviously, but it does give you a very quick surface temperature. I have not found anything such as that that is accessible. And then, of course, you got your instant read thermometers with the probe, which is the thing that I did buy from San Francisco Lighthouse. Basically, the metal probe folds out. You can poke it into some meat and press a button. And that thermometer does actually give you temperature back very fast compared to other talking thermometers I've used. But for some reason, it doesn't work anymore, even though I bought a new battery, put new batteries in it. All of that, tried the battery at both sides. It's one of those like coin style batteries, a little bigger than a watch battery, but that type of battery. And mm-hmm. Yeah, it hasn't worked since it died the first time. So that's not super useful either. But yeah, other than that, week has been okay. I did for a sec think I probably might have been exiting the BEP program. Wait, I didn't get to tell you about this.
No.
I'll tell you what, we're going to save that for the post show, for the extras.
All right, we'll do an extra show for subscribers.
And if you want to know how to be a subscriber, you can go to technicallyworking.show, which will land you on a page, and there's a link that says support the show, and that will take you to our tip jar in Pinecast. Subscribe in Pinecast, and you will get the extra content that we post. One of which I'm not sure when this is going to come out because I haven't recorded it yet, and I'll let Mike decide when he wants to post it as an extra feature. But routine listeners will know that a couple of weeks ago, I attempted to use the Zoom H6 recorder as an audio interface, and that did not go well. and we started out with me recording the steps I had to follow to put it in the proper USB interface mode and all of that. I have since figured out what the issue was. So on the Mac, I got to figure out maybe an alternative for people who don't have loopback, but I did have to resort to using loopback to pull audio from the correct channel, which is not wanted to. I'm going to do a little testing this week because there's stereo mode, which I think would just push the audio across naturally and wouldn't create any of the problems I was creating for myself because I wanted individual track recording to happen. But suffice to say, I am using that now, so it works perfectly, as far as I can tell. And I can monitor myself, which is great.
makes a big difference, doesn't it?
Man, I can't work without monitoring myself. That's not a thing that I can even do. It feels weird. So, but what I am going to do using the Ambios, provided they're not broken, is record those steps again, and we'll release that into the channel, and I'll figure out some way to go from me recording on the Ambios to talking into the microphone that is connected now through the Zoom audio player. And we'll drop that in as an extra. We may eventually at some point also just release that out to the public, just as a thing. But there's so much audio around that. The reason I want to do this is one, because I need to practice with the Ambios. And also I want to create a piece of content for people that didn't go right the first time, but because you probably suffered through my MacBook microphone again for about 5 minutes, we'll give subscribers, supporters of the show, something that will actually, we should really maybe think about coming up with a precise term for that.
What do you want to be called? Reach out to us and tell us what you want to be called.
There you go. I like that. That's a good idea. You tell us what you'd like to be called.
Yeah.
Because supporter sounds kind of dissy to the people who listen to the show and tell other people about the show. Like, they're supporting the show too. Mm-hmm. Those of you who financially support us, but I don't want to keep saying that because that's a mouthful. Our financial supporters. Makes me sound like I'm running a
NPR.
Silicon Valley startup or something. You know, our investors.
That'll be good. We'll see when Demasi gets that audio to me, and then we'll figure out when to publish it. Maybe it'll just be an added show or a bonus for one of our shows, too.
But you have had a busy week. I still haven't gotten into Parallels, by the way. So that's super annoying. I think I'm just going to buy a new license, and you know, hopefully that works. Well, you had a bit, and the reason I've Parallels is top of mind for me because I was trying to get into AT guys. I was like, let me make sure I get some tickets this week because Mike's at CSUN.
Yeah.
And Mike was at CSUN.
That was busy. That was my initial thought was this. I knew it was going to be busy. It was super overwhelming, and I'm glad I didn't go to CES because this was just a fraction of what CES would have been like. Although if I would have went to CES, I would have had to take someone with me. No, but CSUN was fun. Got to connect with several individuals. I recorded some of my journey on the H1E and quickly learned that I need either a windscreen, a pop filter, or a new device. Maybe the last one. Because I also got to put my hands on the H6E, and I'm like, huh, I like this. JJ let me check out his H4, and then we had a customer who we brought her an H6E. And I'm torn on that, because that H4 is kind of right there in the middle, but that 6 feels pretty solid, pretty nice in the hands.
So before we get to your further thoughts and sharing stuff from CSUN, I want your thoughts on the comparison between the H4 and the H6, because I mm-hmm. have the H6. And I personally like the H6 for a couple of different reasons, but I can see why the 4 would also be, well, I kind of feel like I know why the 4 could be attractive for people. But what are your thoughts and what are the comparative differences? And are you leaning in one direction versus the other at the moment?
So at the moment, I'm leaning in the 6 direction just because that gives me more inputs. But and I wear sweatshirts with giant pockets. So we're going to preface with that. I will wear a sweatshirt when it's 80 degrees if I can keep stuff in my pockets. And it drives Mallory absolutely crazy because she's like, you put everything in your pockets. I think the H4 would fit better, though the H6 would fit just fine as well. The biggest difference is the H6 is a bit taller and a bit wider than the H4. Actually, I think they're probably the same width. Maybe I'll have to look at the actual dimensions because I don't quite remember that. Why I'm looking at the 6, though, is it gives you that flexibility of if you have 6 people together, for example, then you can record all of them. I probably will never have 6 people together, but if I'm going to spend that type of money, I might as well spend the extra $100, get the 2 extra inputs, and have the flexibility to do what I want with the device wherever I am. I think it's just personal preference. The 4 would work just fine. I just need something, I think, a little more than the 1 because I wish I would have had maybe the QTU microphone or some sort of XLR microphone to plug in, because the internal mics sound great. But you'll hear throughout the show today some pops / plosives that I did because, A, I held the H1E a little too close to my mouth in a couple of the recordings, and those ones I actually did not pull out of here. I sent all of the recordings that I have to Steven, and he's going to use what he wants to on the show. Quick side note, if you're listening to this on Monday, I will be on Double Tap Tuesday doing a similar recap show with Steven and Sean. I got plosives and a lot of wind sound with the built-in microphones. It is convenient to just pull out the H1E because it's so small. But again, you don't have that XLR connection. So I need the 4 or the 6. And right now I am leaning towards the 6.
Okay. So just the this is an absolute me question at this point. Maybe somebody else will care too. So I'm looking at the six. Is the four simply the six without those additional XLR ports, or is there also some other differences in the layout?
Remind me where the XLR ports on the six.
So on the six, there are two on the left-hand side of the device and two on the right-hand side of the device, and they're near the upper edge of the device if I have the screen part facing me directly.
So the four, they are along the bottom edge closest to you.
Ah, okay.
That is probably the biggest difference.
Okay, gotcha. So I chose the six, and I like the six. For me personally, you know, I was just curious about your thoughts also. It may give somebody else listening a little bit more information about the devices from someone who's seen both of them, because I've not seen the four. I just read about it, but I haven't seen it. So right now, and this is a thing that for me at least is sort of important, whether I end up buying additional attachment microphones or anything like that for this capsule on the top of the six. The fact right now that I don't have those XY microphones in the way, which actually would be in the way considering how things are currently set up on my desk, because it's kind of a mess of wires, because I just put the boom arm back up, not the other one. But the boom arm is back up. I'm just going to leave it up on the desk.
There you go.
And push it up out of the way when I leave. I'm still going to take the Beta 87A back and forth. I did not dig the Earthworks microphone out of the closet because it's way back there. So no Earthworks microphone for another 4 months probably. But I did put the boom arm back up just to make, because I needed more space than I actually had so I could reach the laptop comfortably. And also I really don't have a shock mount for the Beta 87A, which means as I've been navigating around a computer and trying to renew my domain that I didn't realize that expired, you will hear me typing. And you don't want that. Nobody wants that. I don't want that. You don't want that. And Mike doesn't want to have to try to fix that either.
And so. I forgot about taking the XY mics off. Like, that right there is maybe the other reason why I was attracted to the 6, because they can get in the way and you don't want to break them.
Nope, absolutely don't want to break them. And that's the thing for me, is like they definitely will have their uses for sure. But at the times I don't need them, like right now, I would prefer to be able to remove those. And I just have the little cap that goes over that area on there. And that's pretty much how it kind of lives for the most part, unless I'm going to use the mic. So even if I don't end up buying, say, the shotgun mic attachment, I probably will, just because at some point I probably won't buy it as soon as they release them. But at some point we'll buy the additional two XLR ports that you can also put on the top, which would give me six inputs. As Mike said, I probably won't ever be in a situation where I need to plug in six XLR microphones, but I'll pick up that attachment just in case. Mm-hmm. You never know. And, you know, it could be a situation of an event in person where we do actually need to, you know, it's not me recording a podcast, it's me needing to send audio from six different people, and maybe the best way to get that those six people or five people cleanly recorded is going to be to do something like that. So I will definitely buy that attachment.
I was thrown off with opening the micro SD card slot on the six for the customer who purchased. And she didn't want to break the door. And I'm like, well, I mean, I'm going
to
try.
So I'll let you open it. So if you break it, then you have to just give me another one.
Yeah.
So me breaking it, you'll be like,
pretty much.
Oh, you know,
that's where she was going with that. So anyways, you've opened it. It kind of feels a little stiff, like you're going to break something. So that threw me off a little bit. I was expecting something flush like the 1E, and it is not flush.
Yeah, it is. So once you do it a few times, it does slide out a little easier. It's that initial pull that feels like, oh no, this is not going to. But I think that is actually a feature, because if you're using this, and I can see a scenario where that little, because that has more of a latch style thing that you have to grab onto in the first place, I can see that getting caught on something. Mm-hmm. And that initial resistance may allow it to pop loose versus yanking it open and, you know, whatever. But yeah, it does feel a little stiff as I'm pulling it out right now. Like once you get it going, it's going. But yeah, right. It actually kind of snaps into place rather securely. So, and let me do this so I don't actually need to press a button, which is lock. There we go.
Oh, lock is nice.
Yeah.
Push your switch up to lock it. Oh, that was the other thing. She couldn't, and neither could I. It probably took me a good 2 or 3 minutes to find the power switch because I was feeling up the sides all day long. And then I realized, on the bottom edge.
Yep. So if the XLR ports on the four are on the bottom close to you, where is this power switch? Also on the side? On top right?
Yep. Top right edge. It's the opposite side as the one.
Okay. Gotcha. And then
because the one's the bottom left.
Yeah. And then the XY mics on the four are on the opposite end from the XLR?
Yep.
Interesting.
Yep. So you cannot stand it up like you can the one.
Huh. Interesting.
And there are buttons, I think there were on the 6, to lock the XLR ports, and then you press those buttons to release them.
To remove the cable, yep.
Yeah.
Yep. That is a feature I like from some of the professional, like higher-end audio interfaces I've seen, such as the Sound Devices Pre-2. Is once you plug in your XLR cable, like there's no, you're going to yank the whole thing off before you're able to just yank your XLR cable out.
Yeah.
Because you got to press the button to release it.
That is not the case with this damn Vocaster.
Which does prevent, you know, that random person tripping over a cable and yanking it out. And,
Yes.
No more recording for you. You thought you had that whole thing recorded and then you realize somebody yanked the cable out. Or people are tweeting at you or messaging you. We can't hear you. What happened to your audio?
I mean, I appreciate people letting me know that they can't hear me or my audio is gone. But in the heat of the moment, I don't want to hear that you can't hear me. Like, hopefully that sentence makes sense. Like, I appreciate it, but it's yes.
I mean, once I acknowledge, like, okay, I know you can't hear me. I guess people can't hear me saying, okay, you can't hear me, so I'm working on it. But it's sort of like that whole deal with, I'm not going to call anybody out, but because I've done it too. But I'm also just not going to call this person out because I don't know if we're supposed to. But we were doing this recording with an individual in Clean Feed, and we could hear them fine, but their output was not configured right. And they said the thing that I have said and we all have done to people too, which is, I can hear you, but you can't hear me. Check your audio output. He's like, yeah, I'm checking my audio output. I can hear you yelling at me, even though I can't hear you yelling at me that I need to check my audio output and yada, yada, yada. Yeah. Give me a second. I'm trying to do it. See, that's the thing that's not helpful is when people are telling you that they can't hear you, because I can't hear you telling me what to do over here, but I'm doing those things that you're yelling at me to do anyway.
So, the H6E will be the next one that comes to my life, for sure.
Yeah, man. I like it. There's obviously, but I feel like that in anything that I purchase audio related, there's always something that I wish a thing did that it didn't do. Like, I wish this was built with some of the features of the P4. Is that the one everybody... but, you know, maybe there will be an updated version of the P4 at some point. Given the history of the Zoom recorders, that might be 15 years from now.
They are talking like an Essentials Pro line. So maybe that's the replacement for the P4 that will give you some of those routing/other features that you want from the P4 on the Essentials.
Now, mostly what I want is like a dedicated, easy, still give me multi-track. Because I think, if I remember right, I'm fuzzy-ish somewhat on the details because I was trying to learn as much as I could about all the different models of the Essentials lineup. But I think with the H6, if you put it in a stereo mode, you get the ability to loop audio back from the connected device over USB or something and be able to record that as well. But I want that on single track. Like, I want to be able to say set, you know, input 4 to be a USB loopback, so I can now record, you know, Michael, for example, on a separate track on this recorder, even though he's in Clean Feed. And yes, I am still running an Audio Hijack recording because I'm a little crazy like that.
They have saved us before, but you're at home, so your internet shouldn't go out.
Yeah, but you know, it's still the internet. And it is AT&T, so we still don't know why their cellular servers went down there one day.
Yeah.
Apparently they were expanding their network. Like, we broke this while we were trying to make it better for you is what they want us in the cross. Even though what I find funny is there are several governmental agencies that reached out and wanted to make sure or be assured that this was no sort of cyber attack that got to them. It's like, the times we live in.
Yes. So yeah, went to CSUN, super busy, not quite sure how I made it through it in some instances. I grabbed several interviews. I grabbed more business cards than interviews and plan to be reaching out to some of these people next week. Made some great connections, and I want to play some audio into the show to get A, Demasi's thoughts on how the interviews turned out, because I'm always open to feedback. I've already discovered that I need to figure out an alternative intro slash, as you'll hear from some of these, pay attention and learn the person's name that you're talking to when you're interviewing them, because that's kind of important. I went ahead and saw several things, and I understand why people become overwhelmed with the amount of people. I think that I heard somewhere around 3,000 people that were there. I can talk about everything that I got involved in. So there isn't, following up on last week's episode, any stuff I can't not talk about. One thing I'm going to talk about and then see if I get in trouble for it, because I figured, you know, it's easier to ask for forgiveness than permission. And that's the Envision AI. Super excited to see the Envision Assistant come to fruition. There are some bugs right now that they are working through. They are not. So I'll go over a brief overview of what it is. They are not accepting everyone. Primarily people who swung by their booth to see if they can get added, and people who have reached out to Envision can go and apply and see if they get in there. What they're doing is kind of a unique thing. When you open Envision Assistant, there are three buttons on the screen currently. There's a settings button, a start with picture button, and a start with voice button. And when you tap the start with picture button, it'll take a picture and then it pops up and says listening, and you can ask verbally your question. When you're done with your question, you wait for a second, you hear a tone play, and then a AI generated voice from OpenAI comes back and speaks to. Actually, I don't think it's from OpenAI, because they've got like several voices in there, like 20, 30 voices in there that you can pick from, and they all sound natural. So the AI voice comes back and reads the details for what you're asking in your picture. The other one, the start with voice, that's one that kind of has a bug right now. So I'll tell you how it's supposed to work. Currently, it appears to not work as advertised. But again, that's why this is in beta one, I think it is right now. Is you tap on the start with voice, you ask your question, and then it takes a picture and then comes back and gives you the response. What's unique about this, A, is the interface, because it's super clean. I'm nervous about it getting rolled into the main Envision app, but hopefully they do that good, if that's even the decision that they're going to go down with that. But the other thing that's really nice is you can go into settings, and then there's two options under the profile section or the about section where you set a prompt that talks about who you are and what you do. And then there's a prompt about who the assistant is and how you want the assistant to behave. So you can set those facts in the settings, and then the assistant is to behave the way you tell it to and be verbose or be more succinct. And then it already has information that you have. So for me, I put that I have been diagnosed with prediabetes. So when I'm scanning a menu, search out information that I might want to know about the menu options on that, about the ingredients on those menu options. So it's now searching out that information and giving me those details. You can also tell it your name and tell it if you want it to address you by name, and you can give the assistant a name as well. Right now, there's not the ability to voice activate the assistant, but when they do get the assistant available on the glasses, they'll have a way to voice activate it as well. I don't have any recordings from that, but that was one of the cool things that I actually – I think it's important to go to CSUN for things like this because it's opportunities of people who you'll run into in the hall, and they'll be like, yeah, come by our booth and see us and we can get you on the beta. And you miss out on those opportunities in virtual environments and not being there. And then of course we ran into, well, I can talk about it. We ran into Ben from OLARC, and we're having some conversations about OLARC and how we want to use that on AT Guys and some AI things that they're working on too. So do you know what Glidant is?
I do not know what Glidant is. It sounds like some sort of silicon-based lubricant that you would use on your hinges or... Oh, I just realized where it sounded like that bike was going.
Glidants.
I was meaning like for your chair, for your chair, your door hinges.
Yeah.
I realized why, because I was like, why did bike make that noise? And after I said hinges, and I was like, oh, that was going somewhere else. No, I wasn't going there.
So Glidants is a...
Glidants?
Yeah.
Like A-N-C-E?
Yes.
Ah, okay. Her Glidant with a T. And I was like, sounds like something to replace your... what is that? So like WD-40.
Yeah, like WD-40. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, this is... It looks like a little kid's... Remember those popcorn poppers that kids have when you push them around? It's like a lawnmower, but it pops popcorn and it's super annoying and it has a handle on the top.
Yep.
That's kind of what this looks like. It's also been described as a vacuum cleaner. The handle will adjust to a little bit below chest level for me, and I'm 5'9". And so you can push.
That's the tallest it gets?
Yeah, that's the tallest it gets right
it's
now.
It's already out for me. Go ahead, though.
They intend for you to push it in front of you. And at first, I'm like, I don't know about this thing. But when I actually put my hands on it, I really liked the experience. And I'll play a quick clip here, and then we'll talk about it in a moment. Oh, wait. I can't hit that button in that window. All right, so I just got back from using the Glidants, and I'm going to give you my initial thoughts on it. It was a very smooth experience. I picked up the usage really quickly. It really was helpful to stop when there was a crowd of individuals in the aisle, and it was freeing was the first words that I used. I really appreciated having the ability to... let it lead me around people. I feel a lot more confident with it. It's a lot like walking with a dog. I think it would be kind of cool if they could get it a little bit smaller, but my initial thoughts are this is something I actually would love to have. And what Glidants did is you would push it in front of you. It had a camera and sensors on it. And if it sensed something, then it would figure out the best way to move around that something while keeping you safe. If you wanted to turn to the right or the left, you would turn the handle just once, and then it would seek out the next opportunity that it had where it could allow you to turn, and then it would turn as well to let you know that it's time to make that change. I, as I said in the audio, was super impressed with how smooth it went and how quickly I was able to pick up how to actually use it. Now, I am a guide dog handler of two retired dogs now. So it reminded me a lot of working with a dog and how the dog would, they described it this way too, use intelligent disobedience. So it wouldn't go to the left if you turn the handle to the left until it was safe for you to turn to the left. And that was pretty fun. I'm not certain how the battery charges. I did not ask Amos that, but I will say that they're planning to have this be what they say as the cost of a mobile phone. In the interview, I did ask him that I did with Amos. I did say, hey, is that going to be a low-end mobile phone or is that going to be one of the more expensive ones? He evaded the question and said that, sometimes you also might want to use, or your mobile phone does have subscriptions. So maybe you pay a certain subscription if you only go one or two places, or if you you are out and about and traveling a lot, you pay a different subscription price. So pricing
is not how mobile phone pricing works at all.
Right. I know. Pricing seems to be up in the air right now, and or they really don't want to talk about it, but they are taking people to sign up for their beta list, and they may have pricing coming in the next month or two.
So I wonder if they're in, and I haven't heard anything else about this, but from you. So I wonder, is there a phrasing difference here? Not the cost of a mobile phone, but the cost of your mobile phone plan, which would make more sense. It's like, oh, well, if you only use a little bit of data, you can do this plan. But if you're tethering a lot, then you want that plan. That to me makes more sense than the analogy of, you know, your phone plan can be a subscription and cost difference. And it's like, yeah, but no, if you're buying an iPhone 15 Pro Max on a payment plan with Apple or whomever, you're paying the same rate every month. It doesn't matter how much you use the phone. Like, oh, well, I don't use the camera. So, you know, that kind of lowers my cost a little bit.
Anyways. Yeah. I think better description would be more related to like phone plans, and or what he means is you may have to pay for it like you have to pay for a phone plan, but you may also have to pay $1,500 up front because that's what you'd have to pay for an iPhone. You like numbers weren't talked about. I think that is something that they are obviously going to make more clear, but it's interesting. And I would you let a robotic thing guide you around, do you think?
So when you initially mentioned this to me before going to CSUN, you were like, you're going to go check it out. And I was like, man, I don't know about that. I'm not sure about this at all. Hearing your actual hands-on experience with it versus the kind of promotional content, I think, that you were telling me about, which I know, of course, I did not go look at it.
Right.
I wasn't sure about it. Listening to your thoughts about it, I would give it a try. And there are certain scenarios where I think I would use it. And I still think mostly I would rely on my O&M skills with a cane as they exist today. But there are definitely circumstances where I think I would for sure be willing to check this out. Like I was thinking about right now where I'm at Gentry, probably not necessary, but it would also be a good place to do some testing just because there are weird sidewalks that, you know, randomly go off in different directions to get places. But I'm familiar enough with that campus that I wouldn't get, you know, lost because I tend to walk around there a lot now without my cane and then forget where it was. But that's because in BEP, like I can't move around in the kitchen with a cane anyway. So the cane just doesn't get used until I'm actually having to travel somewhere from one building to another in most cases. It would be a good place to test because there's places to go and things where I'm thinking this would be a scenario where if I had one of these that I would use it for sure, probably an airport.
Airports,
grocery stores. Yeah, airports, lines. If I was going to Costco, Sam, something like that, I'd probably use it. I still sort of feel like for me, and again, not having used this and not having enough details about battery life, all of this, that, and other connectivity for how it knows, you know, how it gets its smarts. I'm still looking for, which I still think we're probably at least at minimum 3 years, and I still think that's a very tight or very, I would be very surprised if we get this in 3 years. I'm thinking more 5 to 10 years-ish away from glasses that I can wear that are all day usage that can go into a mode where I can have it give me instructions or information about where to turn in the way that this is doing, except more auditory, obviously, because it can't turn my body. I don't want those glasses. Y'all keep those. I'm buying those. But I would definitely try it out to give feedback. And again, the technology is what's very interesting to me because the device itself, it would take a lot of adjustment for me. If it comes up to your desk at its highest rate, it's probably going to come somewhere around my navel, which makes you a little uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Been jabbed in the stomach a few times by canes. I don't really like that. But I'm more interested in the usage of it, and you know, I happily beta tested, which I wasn't in that. Mike can tell you when he mentioned it to me last week. I was like, you know, see, I'm not even interested in that at all. Mm-hmm. Whereas now I would be happy to use it in different scenarios and give some feedback as to how it worked and potential improvements. So definitely something I'll be tracking.
What do you think about whacking people in the feet while you're standing in line and then running into them? That's why I want it, because I was going through the Starbucks line yesterday. Like, man, I wish I had something that could just tell me when to move forward instead of whacking this random stranger in the feet. And then I found out he was actually at CSUN, so he was used to getting whacked in the feet.
So I used to be more apprehensive about it, and it's still it's a thing I would prefer not to have to do. But if I'm in a scenario, one, use your words. So you don't have to whack people. If you just mm-hmm. nod your cane forward a little easier, you can kind of touch the back of their foot. But what I will also say to people, especially if there's a – sometimes you know when people move, and sometimes you won't. Like, it just depends on the line situation. But if it's one of those line situations where I'm not going to know that you've moved up, I will often ask the person in front of me, like, hey, I don't want to keep, like, checking by tapping you with my cane. So can you just let me know when it's time to move up? Or I'll ask the person behind me. Mm-hmm. There's somebody behind me. Again, it's an opportunity to use your words. Be social. I'm not as much bothered by it as I used to be doing it. Just because, like, I mean, I don't know. It's a part of, like, it's going to happen anyway. Yep. I want to tap because I had to tap you to get up there to know I needed to stop in a lot of instances. So, yeah, it's just one of those things you kind of deal with. It's like
you get over it.
Yeah,
you do for sure. This next one that I want to play in is an actual interview with a gentleman that I did, and all of these were recorded on the H1E. I'm sure you could tell that in the first.
So one. The audio sounds really good. By the way, just to comment on that too. And I think Zoom may make this, or somebody makes these, like the little wind socks or something.
Yeah, they do. They're called the fuzzy something, but yes.
No.
Oh, no?
Not called a fuzzy anything. I mean, I don't know if somebody actually calls it the fuzzy Zoom.
One of them has a fuzzy.
A fuzzy. Yeah. A lot of people refer to these as dead cat. But basically, it's a wind or pop filter, which I have one for the that will work on the Beta 87A or the 2005 that is furry, right? And it's meant to kind of, I guess, help capture the wind to kind of filter that down in addition to just being there for plosive purposes. But yeah, definitely would need one of those. I realized that myself too when using the Zoom H1 to test, but the audio quality, like I could hear you, I could tell you were in a space with mm-hmm. people, right. But you were not drowned out by the people.
Yeah, and I did no processing. Like these are directly off of the H1E. And this next audio, which I'm curious what your thoughts are. Feel free to ask me questions about it. But it's not related to something for blindness, because that's the thing about CSUN is it's not all about blindness. I have two here that are not. But you'll hear stereo separation here. And I think that turned out pretty good. And yes, I do have the beep at the beginning. Scott. Hey guys, I am here with Scott, and Scott, tell us the quick elevator pitch about what you do here.
Well, I'm with GrandCare, and GrandCare is a remote monitoring and remote support platform that helps people with disabilities live more independently. And it does that by doing ADL prompts for all the little activities that you want to do during your day. It's time to brush your teeth, it's time to eat breakfast, it's time to get the mail, all of those things so that you can map out your whole day and have your GrandCare remind you to do those things at the right time. And in addition to that, GrandCare can use wireless motion and door sensors so that your remote support team can be notified if something is wrong, if the front door opens at a strange time, or if there's no motion at the time and place where there should be, or there's somebody's up in the middle of the night. GrandCare can notify those people, and they can do a video call directly into that residence on the GrandCare touchscreen to say, hey, Michael, what are you doing out of bed at 2 o'clock in the morning? You think you should go back to bed? Do you need
I just got home
something?
From the party.
Right. Do you need help with something? Right.
Yeah. But,
and so it does all of that. And there's also all sorts of other great things on here, like games and fun activities for engagement that people enjoy on the touchscreen. And it's completely customizable for every person that uses it. So if you like Monster Trucks, or if you like Metallica, or if you like Clay Aiken, or if you like, you know, Scooby-Doo, or whatever it is, you can have all that stuff on your touchscreen. So that when you get it, you know it's yours.
So does it have something for, I'm thinking like older mom who's home alone maybe, for example, and if she falls, is there a way to help with that, or does it not offer those type of services, kind of like the pendant services that you get?
So we don't do any direct fall detection, uh-huh. but we do have motion sensors, and you can do very clever things with those. For example, if there's no motion at a time and place when there should be, that might be a good indicator.
Ah, yeah.
See, this is what I used to do with my dad. I had a motion sensor in his kitchen, and I told his grandcare, if you don't see him by 10 a.m., then I get a phone call.
Gotcha.
And that's it, right? So that's my checkpoint with dad, right? You can do those throughout the day if you want to. Or if the door didn't open to let out the dog, what's up with that?
Right,
you know,
right.
All those little checkpoints that you can have with somebody.
Those routines are important, especially for people who they have to get things done. And you, as the carer, need to know, hey, they haven't moved around. They haven't opened the door. They haven't let the dog out. So how can I get more information about these? Do you have a website?
Yeah, please go to grandcare.com. That's GRANDCARE.com. And you can find out all you need to know about us. And you can even chat us up on the website if you'd like to know more.
Beautiful. Well, thanks for your time today.
Thanks, Michael.
So it's like Alexa drop-in, but you don't have to use the Amazon service. And it seems to be more targeted at seniors or people who have multiple disabilities or have challenges with independent living but want to stay in their own home.
Hmm. So nobody who's listened to the show for a while is going to be surprised by my next comment at all.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure how comfortable I am putting a surveillance device in my mom's house.
Yes.
Or my house. Yes. Or anybody's house.
Anyone's house.
I get the idea of this, and being completely honest, like it does make sense, I think, for a lot of people to invest in something like this for a parent. Or someone that they're trying to look after. I can also see applications for those who have some ability that are younger, that have some ability to live independently, but do need that additional checking. But still makes me slightly uncomfortable, just being honest. I would probably, and it's just because it's me, I would investigate if I needed this. I don't feel like I'm at a point that I need this for anybody that I'm responsible for. But I would probably myself investigate using some of the things that he mentioned, like, you know, putting some motion sensors in specific rooms, mm-hmm. and just setting up like IFTTT or some sort of automations that if motion is not detected by X hour, you know, send me a text message or push notification, and I can call like, "Ma, why the fuck you ain't out to bed yet? Like, what you doing? What's going on today? Your back hurting? Do we need to come lift you up? What's happening?"
And you could also use some shortcuts on an iPad to put things together to make it easier for people as well. That's what I envisioned. It was not an iPad. It seems like it's a custom device that they've created. But to me, just a couple.
They're probably built on top of Android.
Probably, because everything's built on top of Android. But exactly. A couple of shortcuts, and you're right, some in-home sensors, and you can set up some automated things to do it yourself.
Now, granted, everybody can't go do that. Everybody's not going to take the time to even attempt to do that. But if this were a product for me, or a product that I would actually pay for, because, hey, you've already done most of the work I need to do. I just need to set some parameters that I want you to follow. I would prefer you to say, hey, here's a bundle of shortcuts that you need to install and some apps to download.
And put these sensors in your house, and we'll make it.
And here's the sensor. Yep. And you know, we'll help you finish the setup process here, and then there you go, you're off to the races. Like more of a consulting, I'll help you get this configured once I tell you what you need to buy stuff, as opposed to I'm going to pay a monthly subscription for you to have some weird kind of access into my home. Like but again, it's me, right? I know most people don't care, because there's plenty of people I know with Echo shows in their houses. I've never had an Echo device in my house at all.
Sony was talking about their TVs with cameras in it, and the first thing the guy talked about was, but if you don't want this camera, you can just plug this or you can just flip this plastic piece in front of it, and then you don't have the camera. And I'm like,
why do I need a camera and a TV in the first place?
Because you want to be able to do Zoom calls on your TV, and you also want to be able to use hand gestures to pause your media or to skip to the... No, I don't.
So I use Apple TV. So I'm pretty sure that's not going to work with that. And yeah, nobody's trying to do a Zoom meeting on their TV. I mean, maybe in a corporate meeting room setting, that might be a thing.
Maybe,
I would imagine that camera is terrible. First off.
Yeah.
Secondarily, no, I'm not doing a Zoom from my living room at all with anybody. See what my kids did to this living room, man. I'm not. No.
Sony also had a $3,000 robotic dog that bit me. So that was so it's a plastic dog and it was moving around and stuff. And apparently if you pet it, it likes that. So you pet the top part of it and it likes that. And it likes it when you scratch under its chin. But if you scratch it under its chin and then you just leave your hand there, it'll like do what a dog will do and like nudge you with its mouth. And then it actually just closed its mouth around my finger. And like, whoa, this is weird. A robot's biting me. Tail wags it. If you have positive, like if it does something you really like, you call it a good boy or a good girl, and it will remember that behavior. If it does something you don't want, you say no, and it remembers not to do that behavior. Great for someone who might have cognitive challenges and or someone who just wants to have a companion but doesn't want the responsibility of taking care of a companion. The one question kind of
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, the one question I did not ask is, how do you charge it? Do you, like, plug something into its back, or does it go and sit on a wireless charger? Like, I believe what it did or what it should do is go lay on its wireless bed, and when it wakes up, it's charged.
Huh, that's interesting. So, kind of like something that would be good for someone, even that needs a...
companion.
Yeah, support animal.
Yeah.
But maybe either doesn't want, like you said, doesn't want the additional responsibility of having to walk / feed / whatever said animal, or maybe doesn't quite have the mental capacity, whether it's memory or anything else like that, to actually take care of an actual animal. So
yeah,
that seems cool. Not anything definitely that I would ever buy, but... that seems cool. I think I would be creeped out by a robot dog or cat
in my house. It was weird, man. It was weird. Just saying. The tail wagged, too. I'm like, wait, I don't know that I like this. Speaking of subscriptions, here's a 3-ish minute clip of a subscription that isn't for me, but I could see the value in it. I think you might be able to see the value of this for people at AIDB. And I am here with a gentleman, I forgot to catch his name.
Josh.
And Josh, tell me a little bit about what you guys got going on.
You betcha. Yeah, so we work at Sorenson. So we offer interpreting services for the deaf.
Mm-hmm.
We're one of the largest providers for interpreters throughout the U.S.
I've heard of
throughout
it.
The world.
Okay.
We offer in different languages, so it really sets us apart. But what I was telling you earlier, the greatest thing is our new app. And that's kind of what, you know, we want to talk about is that new app is great because what's amazing is any deaf or hard of hearing person can come in with their cell phone. They can scan this QR code, and with that QR code, it'll actually pull up a live interpreter anytime they want. So they have that app. They just push a button, and now it allows them to be able to talk to anybody they want without an interpreter next to them. So that's the cool thing. That's the fun thing.
Yeah. How does someone find that app?
Yeah, so I have this. It's throughout the hotel here, but I have this card I can give you.
Okay.
I'll grab it for you. It in that card, they just scan the QR code and it works. So
okay.
Marriott's the one that provides the service as far as paying for it, which makes it to where while you're here, it's unlimited, all you can use.
Gotcha. And then when you're not here, you just pay a monthly fee? Or?
Yep. So a lot of times the nice thing, though, is most businesses pay for it. So like example, Starbucks. Starbucks is our client. So if you walk into Starbucks right now, you can scan their QR code as a deaf person, and then a live interpreter pulls up. So now I don't have to just text what order I want. I can actually have full conversations with these people. So it's amazing.
Yeah, it is. But if I wanted to as a consumer, I can pay you to use it in places that don't offer that service?
Yeah, so we have, and that's another one. So the one I'm saying is Express. The other one is called the VRI or VRS. So VRI is video And yes, it's the same type of thing. They can pull up an interpreter. You can actually have face-to-face conversations, and that's more on the consumer side. So we offer both.
Okay. This sounds like, I imagine you're familiar with Aira.
I am.
Yeah. Yeah. Sounds like Aira for
the blind community. Yeah. 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 Aira is just down the, you're about 3 booths away from them.
Okay. Well, perfect. I appreciate it. Yeah. So if I wanted more information and I don't have one of those cards, how do I get more information about what you guys do?
You can go to Sorensen.com. It's really easy. You can find us here, obviously. I can give you a card. So if you want to find some more information.
And for the spelling challenge, like myself, how do you spell Sorensen?
Sorensen.
Beautiful. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, you betcha.
A little Canadian there. Yeah, you betcha. Or Minnesota, maybe.
Maybe. He jumped into it and had a really good, I'm ready to do this pod quick interview voice, like kind of like he's done this before a little bit.
Yeah. So that is very cool. I noticed he didn't actually pin down pricing what it would cost for a consumer. But that is interesting, and that is something potentially that I think BEP should definitely look at. I will evaluate this a little bit more and maybe reach out to them for maybe a trial to see how that goes. But yeah, that is definitely interesting. Speaking of Gentry and BEP in the deaf community. So I think I've said this on the show before, but I've been doing a sign language class on Tuesday evenings. Which for the past couple of weeks has been canceled for some reason. Not sure what's going on. I mean, I need to get this stuff together. But I got to a point that, and I've now since forgotten some of this. The terrible thing about it is like, if I don't use it, I forget it.
Yeah.
But I do remember all of the alphabet. I need to go over the numbers again. But point being, I've gotten to a point where I feel like I can hold on a reasonable conversation for a person that is an accomplished signer, meaning they've been doing it for years. It's probably like talking to a baby, but we can still have a conversation without me having somebody sighted around. And what has actually proven that is one of the young ladies who is actually a part of the group teaching the ASL class to them. And this is all blind people in this specific class, or visually impaired people, in this specific class on Tuesday evenings. One of the instructors is completely deaf, and then we have a couple of instructors that are hard of hearing, but they have the ability, you know, they're verbal, so they can speak, and they have some hearing as well. This particular lady is completely deaf and is, I'm going to say, mostly nonverbal. Mm-hmm. But she comes in the line, and I was actually doing popcorn this week for break time. So she comes in and it kind of catches me off guard because she reaches out and grabs my hand first and then like starts signing in my hand. I was like, oh. And then I figured out who it was. I was like, oh, okay. That's why she was comfortable enough to just reach across this counter and just grab my hands. But we got the whole popcorn, you know, what she wanted, how she wanted me to do her salt and all that stuff done without anybody helping. And then I've since had a couple of other deaf people do the same. So things are working.
Yeah.
And,
you're getting
the classes have been beneficial.
I had my first conversation with someone from NIH, National Institute of Health, with a interpreter, and I was surprised with how smooth the conversation went. Not experiencing that before, so that was fun. So Aira for the deaf is what Sorensen is, and this last one that I'm going to play is a little bit longer, and we'll wrap up after this if Damasi has any questions. But this is a device that might sound a little familiar, ARX AI. Maybe. Helps if I'm actually in the right window. See? I'm not a professional. Name again?
David.
David.
Yeah.
Hey, everyone. I'm here with David from the RNIB, and he just told me about these awesome-looking headset. I almost call it glasses. They're not quite glasses, are they?
Well, no. We're calling it the ARX AI headset. Not glasses. It doesn't have any glasses such as the Envision product, which essentially is put around a glass. It's designed to just slide on your head. It has an 8-megapixel camera, which fits on the side. It has bone-conducting technology to allow you to hear the world around you. The main point of this product, I suppose, is to work with apps such as Microsoft Seeing AI and allow you to navigate places you haven't been before. So if you're a white cane user or a guide dog user, although seeing AI is brilliant, it can be very difficult to use while moving. Certainly, you don't really want to be holding your mobile phone in your hand. It's the same time as your dog's pulling you one way, or indeed you're trying to navigate a bumpy street.
And then
you
have publics of the members of the public pulling you another way. Yeah. Really makes it difficult for sure. And it looks like it's sized pretty good. The problem with shocks that I've had in the past with some customers is they're a little smaller. And yeah. So that seems like it fit multiple size heads, and it just fits on your head just like these shocks do, right?
Yeah, it's nothing to be proud of, but I have a baseball cap. I discovered my baseball size is size 8, which apparently is the biggest one you can get. So this thing does fit on my head. Now, to make it fit on my head, I've removed the elastic option on the back.
Okay.
Most people would use that, and they would be able to adjust it comfortably to fit their own individual head sizes. But, I mean, you're not going to get a much bigger head than mine, physically that is anyway. And it fits me fine, so I'm confident it would fit the vast majority of head sizes. There's always exceptions.
So it's got a rectangle camera on the right side of it that faces forward, correct?
Yeah.
And there's three buttons on there. The circle button, you press once, and that does...
It's like an action button, so it will tell you to do something. So if you want to activate the artificial intelligence on the device, if you're in the right mode, you would hold the circle button down to ask a question. Mm-hmm. You press it gently once to almost process an image, hold it down... Secondly, to analyze what that image is. So example I was using, if you go into a restaurant and you're looking at a menu, you can take a picture essentially of the menu, and then you can ask using the artificial intelligence questions to decide what you want. It may be that you're a vegetarian, mm-hmm. and you want to find what the vegetarian options are. Maybe you only fancy a dessert. Read out the desserts to me.
Or what's the price of the chicken sandwich, exactly. Which is huge right exactly. there, just to get those details.
Exactly. Probably quite expensive if you're buying in Anaheim, from what I've seen. But.
Yes, sir. that's just the nature of Southern California, for sure. I'll tell you, I never spent as much on a meal than I have down here. Can you play music through it, too, or is it only for use with the Seeing AI?
Yeah, well, Seeing AI, and indeed the individual app, ARXAI have their own app, which mm-hmm. it works very well with. We're hoping Be My Eyes will be involved very soon.
Ooh,
as well.
That'd be cool.
The whole point of it is to be open to as many apps as possible and let people use the app they want in the way they want to.
And now here's the uncomfortable question. Does it work on the Blind Shell Classic 2 yet?
Oh, yes, it does. Yeah.
Oh, it does. Okay. Yeah,
it will work. I mean, it works on every phone except an Apple phone at the moment. We would absolutely love it to work on Apple phones because we think Apple phones are really good. They are the most accessible phones out there. But it takes power from the mobile phone, so there is no battery on the headset, so it uses a wire. There are two advantages of having the wire. The main advantage is the data speed allows the artificial intelligence to be a lot quicker and more responsive. It also means you don't have to have a battery on the side of the headset. Some people don't. You don't really want a lithium battery right next to your temple.
No.
Of course, it reduces the weight. The weight is 95 grams, which in my American terms, I'm guessing, is about just under 4 ounces.
Something like that. I'm horrible about math. We'll just say 95 grams.
Yeah. 95 grams, yeah.
So is it available worldwide?
It's available worldwide, yeah. We're looking for organizations to distribute it in the U.S.
And if we're outside the U.S. or in the U.S., where do we get it now?
We can get it through the ARCS website or indeed the RNIB website, rnib.org.shop.
Perfect. Well, thank you very much for chatting with me today. And
now... Fun fact, I ran into David literally later that night on my way back to my hotel room and almost tripped over him. And he's like, it's a good thing you ran into me, not someone else. You need help somewhere. So that's a fun fact about David. I'm not sold on this. Pricing is about $799 is what they're going to price it at. It does use bone conduction to give you the audio feedback, but it also has a cable coming out of the right side and it does go to a USB-C. As he said, the iPhone 15 and 15 Pros don't push enough power through the USB port to power the headset, but it does work with Android and, as you heard, apparently Blind Shell.
So that's probably a compatibility thing that Apple needs to work on, because pushes enough power for other stuff. So it's more or less Apple just needs to, they probably need to get that certified or something, I would imagine. Lookout is the app I was looking for. And then when he mentioned it didn't work on the iPhone, I was like, oh, well, why not, mention Lookout? Like, because Seeing AI has not been on Android all that long. And I still, in a lot of instances, prefer Lookout.
So Microsoft made an announcement that they, Seeing AI, was certified to work on the ARX AI headset last week. And so to me, that said, oh, so that's probably one of the reasons for Seeing AI to finally come to Android, because it's been asked for a while.
Yeah.
So.
So what does this headset look like? From the description, from the conversation, because it wasn't a description, I'm assuming that it's sort of like, what's the best way I can say this? It's kind of like putting the shocks on backwards, maybe?
No, it's like putting the shocks on regular, but on the right side, where the transducer is on the right side, you have a rectangle box that is connected to the right transducer.
Gotcha. And so there's not anything going over the front of your face. It is like putting a shock. Okay.
No. Gotcha. That right side camera lies flush against your temple.
So this does sound interesting. I think it has some potential. I think being built in the way that it does. And I'm sorry, I know you asked him the question. Did he actually say whether or not you could push audio through here, like music or phone calls?
He did not. I don't think he did.
I know you asked that question. Yeah. I was like, maybe I missed the answer.
Yeah, I don't think he did. And I didn't think about that when we were talking.
Well, you asked about music. You asked about music.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't remember if he answered that question or not, but I just thought about like phone calls as well, because that could make it a little bit more valuable as a product.
I think you can, because it does have the built-in microphone, so it probably just acts as like an external headset with video as well. So I'm assuming you can, but you know what they say about assuming.
Yeah. Again, this is something I would be interested in maybe testing and giving some feedback.
Mm-hmm.
One of the issues that I don't, and not having used it, I could be wrong, but the impression I get from the interview is that there's a lot of, to use what the British would understand, a lot of faffing about with switching modes and pressing buttons and remembering to press this once or press and hold it for that mode of this feature, which would get irritating to me. And the other issue for me, which is purely aesthetics, is you said the wire is on the right side. Yep. I carry my phone in my left pocket.
Ah, so you're going to have wire going across your body.
So, I mean, if it were even long enough for that to work, yeah, I will have a wire going across my body or down around my back or something. Yeah. That would be irritating. Also, wires in general now kind of irritate me. I don't know why, but having a wire running somewhere on me constantly for me to use a thing is slightly irritating. But again, this does have some interesting, and maybe I can get the Gentry AT folks to invest in one of these, and I can do some testing out, because it does have some interesting applications for checking information or even potential usage with vending machines. A lot of like price changes for some machines are easy, like especially the older machines is really easy. It's stupidly easy, actually. And I made the comment the other day when she was showing me how to change the price on one of the very, very old machines. Like this machine has been in place since Teal was in school, because she used that machine.
Yeah.
That one is really easy. And it also has Braille on the internal panel, so you know which button you need to push. If you know what you're needing to do, you know what to press. You have to remember some steps, but that could be easily accomplished by just making a little cheat sheet of, you know, press F2, then press this, and then put in your price. Right. Like, not difficult to do. The newer machines, however, ain't none of that. Like, no Braille, no nothing. Like, it's crazy. I was like, why do things get better technologically and less accessible? And that has always been a concern of mine. As a side note, as we rapidly improve technology, it seems that accessibility suffers even more as those advancements come. See the McDonald's ordering thing. But one thing that does interest me here with this could be, and this would have to actually be some functionality built into their app, possibly, maybe Seeing AI could work there, is I need to navigate a menu that shows up on a screen, and like I need to know what it is before I select the options to do things. It could be useful there. It could be useful as well as scanning, say I'm looking for the expiration date of a product that is at a machine, so I know if I need to actually pull that product because it is expired or is about to expire. So some interesting potential uses there. Everyday travel or moving around, I'm not sure. I would have to, and this also would apply to the vending aspect of this. Does it respond quickly enough? That is my biggest issue right now with even seeing AI and Lookout in a lot of instances is the response time is not quick enough for me to be efficient. And as I pointed out to, I forget who I was having this conversation with about using apps. And I was like, I tried all these apps in vending. They work, but they're slow. Or they're ineffective in some instances, and they're definitely inefficient because if I'm trying to check up here on this top shelf to see what products are up here because I'm looking for a specific type of chip, I can't at this point, I've not been able to successfully at this point, take a picture of something and say, hey, tell me if there's any, you know, ranch Doritos up here. Or something. And trying to scan with live text mode, again, you're oftentimes getting information that is unnecessary before you actually get to the right part of the label or right area of the box with the right label to tell me what's in this box. So very inefficient still seems to be one of the biggest things. In your kitchen, because I'm trying to figure out if this is, you know, Hamburger Helper or macaroni and cheese. That's a bad example. You shake it up. But anyway, you get my point. Like, you know, is it macaroni and cheese or Hamburger Helper or whatever? Like, okay, I'm fine with a little bit of a delay there because this is one product. But if I'm trying to run through a bunch of products and figure out like, oh, my cart got tipped over and all my stuff fell out and now I'm at the machine, I need to figure out what's what. And I'll be here 2 hours.
That half second adds up. Like, it doesn't seem like a lot when you're doing one or two things, but that half second can add up real fast.
Yeah, and a lot of times it's even more than a half second because it starts reading crap that's not even, it's not what you're holding up to or trying to read. It's something over the top of it that it starts reading first, and you don't realize there's something in the background that it's reading until you're like, what the hell do you mean? Oh, the escape evaluation, I mean, no, evacuation plan. No, why are you not reading the chips in my hand?
Yeah,
what are you doing?
Yeah. Read these chips to me. And right now, AI is a little delayed on, well, a lot of delayed on that. You're looking at a couple of seconds if you just want to take a picture, even if you have the ability to ask it beforehand, what am I holding in my hand, you're still going
to
be waiting.
You're still having to wait for that. And then being a blind person, oftentimes you have not taken the picture of the area that you thought you were taking the picture of.
Yeah. That's the one thing that I will say. I don't think maybe in one or two of the conversations it said it, but AI was, as I'm sure you can imagine, the thing talked about at CSUN. It should have been called the 39th annual CSUN, home of AI, and how AI is going to help you live a better AI life. It was, every other word was AI, it sounded like. So,
artificial intelligence.
Yes, either AI or accessibility remediation.
What I find interesting about the term AI is for the longest time, Apple stuck to its guns and would not say artificial intelligence or AI. It was machine learning, which I still feel at the current point, at the current juncture we are right now, that is more active or applicable description of what we're dealing with right now is machine learning, not actual artificial intelligence. But Apple's now saying AI too, so it's all over. I haven't given up, but I've just stopped fighting the battle. Like, whatever, it's not a hill to die on. But I just feel it's very, what's the word? It's not disingenuous, because I don't think people are trying to be disingenuous. I just feel like it's not a good descriptor. Artificial intelligence means something different to me. Machine learning, which Apple has been talking about for years, which is always why I chuckle when I hear somebody say, oh, well, Apple's finally getting into AI. And it's like, they've been doing the machine learning thing for years. It's just they weren't using the terminology AI, because, again, I still feel like mostly what we're dealing with at this moment is machine learning. GPT models aren't really intelligent. They just figure out, it's like a very, I think the best description I've heard that I think really simplifies it, but doesn't oversimplify how cool the technology is. It's like, it is like your spell check powered by AWS.
Mm. Mm.
That makes sense because it is. It's not intelligent, but it's just.
It's predicting
the
actually,
next words.
Actually, it's better. A better thing would be predictive text, like your predictive text on the iPhone or on Android. I saw this on Android recently too. I was like, oh, I didn't actually figure out how to consistently activate the next word, but yeah, it was a thing. But yeah, it's kind of like predictive text being powered by Azure or S3 or Google Cloud or something, right? It's the next level text prediction, which again is the machine learning what is the next word to go. It's not the machine intelligently deciding, oh, you asked for this, I'm going to give you that answer based off the knowledge that I have to pull from. We're not there yet, but
not yet.
Anyway.
We will.
Yeah, we will eventually get there at some point, but we're not there yet. But, you know, listen, Apple's giving it up, and we all know how Apple will stick to its guns. They still don't want you to say the iPhone. It's iPhone. You know, iPhone 15, not the iPhone 15. Like, they still are on that. So if they've given up the battle, I guess I should let it go.
Well, you know, there's rumor Apple's going to partner with Google and use Gemini in their AI for the iOS 18.
That makes sense to me, honestly. I've heard that same rumor. I also hear they're talking to OpenAI. This could be one of those things where they're trying to have a conversation and they kind of leak this. Somebody was instructed to leak this so that somebody is aware that they're talking to somebody else is kind of the thing I get behind. It's like, whether it's them trying to say to Google, we don't like the terms you're doing, so we're going to let it leak through the press that we're also talking to OpenAI and what's the other company? Claude. I think they're talking to the people behind Claude. I can't remember the company behind Claude, but I think that's who they mentioned.
Perspective AI, I think. Or no, maybe. Anyways. Yeah.
So they're talking to them. It makes sense in the way that I have heard this framed and also the way that I was thinking about, because Apple can't build their own GPT, like not to compete with, say, Claude or ChatGPT or it's not Bard. You just said the
Gemini.
Name of it. Gemini. Thank you. It's always Bard to me because that's what I first tested it as. They can't build that, not because they don't have the money to build it. They don't have the infrastructure to build it. And it does take a while to build that sort of thing. But what it does seem like they're doing, and I was always curious what they were going to do. I'm like, I'm pretty sure they're going to introduce some on-device stuff that may be cool. But what are they going to do when it's time to go to the cloud? And having Google or OpenAI or AWS for some reason seems to keep getting left out of this conversation by people. And maybe it's because they're not talking about it as much themselves. They have some stuff going on over there. I haven't investigated any of it, but I know that they have some stuff going on over there. It's just interesting to me that they're one of the biggest cloud computing companies in the world is out of this conversation, other than powering people's models, like maybe Claude, for example. They could be powering Claude. I don't know if they are or not. You know, OpenAI is all in with Azure. But it would be interesting to see them have one or even multiple of these GPT models and even Stable Diffusion's image generation stuff, as like they handle. So, you know, they're handling the interpretation. Apple being them is handling the interpretation of your request on device with their smaller language model. And when they need to go out for cloud return information, they're using the API to talk to Gemini, for example, get the answer back that you're looking for, get the information, and then present it again through their language model, their smaller language model on device, in a format or however they want to display that to the user or in the context that you're looking for. So they're kind of using it like to get information, kind of in the way that DuckDuckGo works, right? DuckDuckGo actually uses Bing in the background for a search, but it anonymizes your searches, so Bing's not getting the information off of you that way. And it presents their layout of their search results in the way that they want to present them to you versus, you know, the way that Bing might present search results to you. So I can see Apple doing something like that, which has the advantage of whether they partner with Google or OpenAI or whomever, of them being able to still say, well, we're not sharing data because we're anonymizing all of your requests because they start from our language model on device, which if we have to go out to the cloud, then we go through our VPN servers that they have, because we know we have those, right? If you're our Cloud Plus premium one, whatever subscriber, you get that for free. They're running it through their proxy server, so there's no identifying information, and then they're able to get that information back from, say, Gemini, and then using their on-device language model, present the information in the context that makes sense to you. And I can't think of a good prompt at the moment that would make sense. Give me the best flight, the cheapest flight for me to take from Birmingham to Atlanta in the next 4 days. Mm-hmm. Well, on device can't give me that at all, but on device can call out to the API in Gemini, and actually I'm thinking OpenAI at this point, because OpenAI can browse the web and pull some information. Well, instead of it just being slatted, well, here's what I found for the best flights. You could go with this flight on Delta, yada, yada, yada. It could pull this back in and say, okay, based off what you, Apple's on device language model, gets the information back and then presents it to me in such a way as, so the cheapest flight that we found based off, your request and also being able to look locally at my calendar, et cetera, et cetera. Ooh. We think this Wednesday flight at 2:30 is the best one, and the price is, only $79.
Would you like to use
on Southwest?
To book it?
Would you like to book this flight now?
Yeah. And then you use Apple Pay to book it, and then it adds it to your calendar for you because it knows that you need to have that on your calendar. That
it adds
would
the
be,
boarding pass to your wallet.
Ooh, that would be cool. And then reminds you 24 hours beforehand, check into your flight.
Mm-hmm. You have a flight coming up. Would you like to go ahead and check into it now? And then there's a yes or no button, right?
Yep.
And a notification.
Yep. That would
this
be
could
smart
go
theory.
Some interesting place. Yeah, this could go some interesting places, and they have released a recent paper on building a small language model, basically, that would most likely run on device, like on a phone, that is able to train the data of a larger language model and how it wants to be presented or what information specifically it wants it to go after. So, I think that's probably what they're aiming for, as opposed to the way some people reported this initially. It's like, oh, well, Apple's so behind, they're just going to go out to Google and have Google handle all their stuff. Like, I don't really think that's the idea. You know, think about who Apple is. They're going to want on-device. They're going to want anonymization. And Apple cannot build the infrastructure. They don't have the infrastructure. Google has the infrastructure that they already run in Google Cloud. Microsoft just, basically bought themselves a portion of OpenAI, regardless of how you choose to look at that. That's the way I look at it. They bought OpenAI, or at least a significant stake in OpenAI, and then gave them a bunch of Azure credits, so they're not having to pay for OpenAI usage on their end. And there's their large language model, right? They didn't have to build it. Google built theirs internally and used their own infrastructure. Microsoft bought theirs, basically, or invested in theirs, and then still using their infrastructure. I don't really know what AWS is doing other than powering other people's stuff for sure, but I felt like I saw something, and maybe it's just emails I've gotten from AWS about their AI stuff they're talking about at Oz reInvent or whatever, AWS reInvent. I haven't followed up on any of it because I just don't got the time. But I think this is where Apple is going to go. And to me, that makes the most sense instead of them trying to very poorly build a large language model. I can see them being able to build smaller language models. And there are several of those out now that can run on your Mac. I don't know how you would get them on your phone necessarily at this point, but there are several that are out there that can run on a Mac or on a Windows computer that are smaller language models that, training them to do specific things is a thing. This is Apple being able to reach out to the broader internet. It's like ChatGPT getting the ability to browse websites, right? It's kind of like that, I think, it just with anonymized data and Apple being able to train the model that they're using with their API access so that it gives you hopefully less, what people call hallucinations. I just call stupid answers to your questions, or untruthful or unverifiable answers to your questions. Because I see a lot of things that I've gotten back from GPT over the time I've been using it, where I obviously know that answer is wrong. Like, it's not that it's trying to intentionally deceive me. It's like, okay, this didn't work. Because the way you're writing that code, that would not work in WordPress. That is not how WordPress works. That won't work. I can look at that and tell it doesn't work. I only need to try to run it to see if it works. Like, that ain't gonna work. It's not even a function called in WordPress.
Yeah, OpenAI.
Yeah, you got to write some whole new code for WordPress or write a plugin for WordPress in order for that function call to even possibly work. But hopefully that's what their small model would be good at, is training the larger language model on how it's kind of like you working with your prompt, crafting your overall general prompt for a custom GPT, right? It's kind of what I feel like this on-device small model would be able to do, so it can ensure that it's getting back the most relevant information based off your query. So smart Siri, as you said.
We bought an Eve camera, and I don't know if you know anything about these Eve cameras, but we returned it today. It was a really nice camera. Good. It was big, and it was going to do all of the things that we needed, but you had to hardwire it into electricity. And I'm like, nope, ain't doing that.
So
we bought Eufy cams, and we will talk about those next week and let you know.
Send
those back too? Why?
Yes.
They have HomeKit compatibility, so you can connect them to your home and use your iCloud storage.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Well, do them that way if you're going to keep
them. That's the way we're going to set them up. Got them off of Allison's blog. This is where I found the ones. By the way, had lunch with her.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Curious about your thoughts on cameras. Let's talk about those next week.
We shall talk about those, because there's a couple of links I will share with you at some point. But also, I'm curious what you think about those, because some of the cameras that I am thinking about getting, and I just haven't bought because we haven't moved yet. Some of them are power over Ethernet, and some of them are not. But not all of them are HomeKit compatible, which means bringing out the old Raspberry Pi, man.
Yep. Yeah, we looked at Ubiquiti cameras, too.
No.
And then I saw the
no.
Price. I'm like, nope.
No.
Nope. Nope.
No. I listen, they may be good and they have some nice features, but no. Like, I can get 3, 4. That's just too expensive, man. And there's no HomeKit compatibility and no promise of it coming. So that means I have to jump through.
At that price, I want HomeKit compatibility.
Yeah, at that price, if you work with HomeKit, you might get me to do some, try to finesse some ways into getting this. But you don't even got HomeKit. Like, man, I'm not doing that. Not doing it at all.
So that's a brief overview. CSUN, AI, CSUN, married together. I will go back to 40th next year. I will not buy my flight 2 weeks before the event because that was dumb. Thank you, Costco. Costco saved me a bit of money. But it was fun. It was expensive, but some of the connections I made was well worth it. I got to talk to a friend who I've known online since 98, but never actually talked to. So that was an awesome experience. Like, never talked to in person. That was an awesome experience. And got to meet a couple of listeners. So really appreciated that. I will say it is.
Shout out to those listeners.
Yes. Shout out to Jane. You know Jane.
Are they technically working listeners or just unmute?
Jane listens to everything that we do. Technically,
shout out to Jane. What's happening?
Yeah, yeah. Technically working, unmute all of them. So,
I ain't shouting out no unmute people because I'm not on that show.
We'll have to do it next year. We'll have to get you there too, and then you and I can finally meet after working together for 10 years.
Yeah, we might actually meet this summer.
But, yeah, we'll see what things look like.
Yeah, but I'm definitely interested in trying to go next year. Next year should be a good one. I'm thinking too, because it's the 40th anniversary. So hey, always good to show up on an anniversary year, like a big number, 40. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I would have tried to get there this year. Obviously, that was not going to work. But
yeah,
next year for sure. And actually, I think I may have some ways to maybe raise some funding to help get me there, considering an individual who asked me, was I going this year? It just now occurs to me that, you might be able to raise some funding or help me get some funding to pay to get out there next year. Sir.
Right. Yeah. Creative. creative relationship building. I'm going to talk for half a second right before Demasi closes it up for us. And the reason I'm rambling for a second is I wanted to unplug my headphones so I could unwrap them from the dog and I can hear Demasi again. On that note, Demasi, do you want to wrap it up?
All right. So as usual, again, I want to thank those of you who contribute to the tip jar and support us financially. First and foremost, we truly appreciate it. You're probably going to be responsible for financing our new Mastodon server here at some point.
Yes.
Also, I want to thank those of you who listen. I want to thank all of my listeners, all of our listeners. They're not just my listeners, Michael listeners too. I want to thank all of you for listening and share the show. You know, post about it on your favorite social media platform. Even if we're not there, you can still post about it on that platform. I'm not going to be upset. Facebook, Instagram, Threads,
X.
X.
LinkedIn.
LinkedIn. Well, yeah, LinkedIn. That's good, actually. Post about it on LinkedIn.
Yeah, go share us on LinkedIn. I need to go share us on LinkedIn.
Yeah, me too. I just thought that's why I was like, Ashley. I was like, yeah, Ashley, I should go like do that my own self. But we appreciate all of you for listening as well. We mentioned for those of you who are financial supporters, give us some ideas of how you would like us to refer to you in the future. Because I think everybody that listens is a supporter, and I don't want to keep saying financially supporting us or whatever, some form of that, because it's a lot to say. So I need a slang term for you guys, basically is what I'm trying to come up with here. You can reach us, whether you have feedback about that or anything else, at feedback@technicallyworking.show. Or you can reach out to us on Mastodon. He's Payown, Payown, at unmute.community. And I am Demasi, Damashe, at unmute.community. It's episode 53. See you guys next week.
Did you almost say feedback@unmute.show?
Yes. Unmute dot something. I don't know what was coming after the unmute, but yeah, that is literally what I almost said.